Praise the Lord. Well, it's good to be back here once again. Amen. I'm glad you're all here. I want to go to Titus chapter 2 and start to get into the word here. It says, "Speak thou the things that become sound doctrine, that the aged men be sober, grave, temperate, sound in faith, charity, and patience." And then down here at verse 6, "Young men likewise exhort to be sober-minded, in all things showing thyself a pattern of good works and doctrine, showing uncorruptness, gravity, sincerity, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that he that's of the contrary part may be ashamed, having no evil thing to say of you." Now, if I flow in line with these verses, then there's something for everybody, because there's older men and younger men here. Amen. So I do want to say I'm really, really glad the younger men are here, those of you that are here that would identify yourself as such, because I really believe God wants to speak something to you, bring an impartation, some things over tonight, tomorrow, that will be helpful to you. And that's good. It's a good thing. So it says here, you know, to exhort the young men, be sober-minded. Exhort the old man to be sober-minded. So that includes all of us. And to be sober, sometimes you think, well, that means you're not drunk. Well, sober is to have self-control over your passions, your desires, your thoughts, your opinions. We need to be controlling our flesh. If your flesh is out of control, you will regret it. You will cause damage, destruction, and a lot of pain and sorrow. Plus, you'll never really see what was meant to be with your life. So it's a very important concept, being sober-minded. And he uses other words here, grave, temperate. It's other words that are speaking to the same thing. There's a sincere heart, and your words are sound. You're not out of control. People don't respect people that are out of control. You know, when you have self-control, you begin to gain respect. And especially if it's in a godly way, people will notice that. They might not say anything, or they may say something, but they'll notice there's something different about you. Especially when there's something that makes them mad and you don't get mad. Yeah, that really shorts the fuses out for a lot of people in the world. They don't understand, like, well, how is it that this isn't getting to you like this? So that's a work in progress. It's a fruit of the Holy Spirit. He produces this in us, but we do need to be purposed relative to this. Now, as we go on, I want to pick up at verse 11. It says, "The grace of God that brings salvation has appeared to all men, teaching us." God's grace in your life is going to teach you something. It's the grace of God in our life is not just, oh, so you're happy, feel good, you're blessed. No, the grace of God, there are some different definitions, but one is God's influence. Strong's Concordance had this definition, God's influence on your heart. Now, if someone's influencing you, a person, they begin to lead you into a certain path. And you might have, sometimes parents will say, "Who's this person you've been hanging out with? You're starting to act like them." Hopefully you haven't heard that, but you might have heard that along the way. And, you know, where someone realizes someone's bringing an influence that's not good and I don't like it. You know, so they'll notice that. That's not you as I know you. So now that's in a negative sense. If we're encountering God and he's influencing us, he's going to lead us in the right path. For someone to say they're walking upright before the Lord and walking his ways and, oh, they're so spiritual or whatever. If they say that, God's leading them in that way, but there's no fruit, I mean, I have to really question, well, how much are they under his influence? You know, we have the legal terminology, I guess, DUI, driving under the influence. And someone drink alcohol and they begin to become a terror on the road. They're not in control of the wheel, not in control of the car, not in control of the speed, not in control of their judgment. Their judgment's bad. Why? Because they're under the influence of something. Now, we're all under the influence. I want to be WUI, walking under the influence of the Holy Ghost. That's the influence that we want. Now, when you're real young, you live under the influence of your parents to where, you know, when I didn't grow up speaking Chinese, I speak English. You speak English because I heard my parents speak English. I was under that influence, and you begin to learn their ways. Then there's a realm where if you're from South Central Pennsylvania, you act a certain way, and you don't even know it, possibly. I like to point that out sometimes, or someone's from New York. They act a certain way. No offense intended, but you know, we need to be enlightened. The influences around us contribute to form how you think, how you live, how you move, your behavior, and so forth. Now, we can have influences of the flesh, influences from demonic realms, and there can be the influence of God and godly people. So the grace of God that brought salvation is the influence, or should be the influence in our life. It's not just some fancy word that you just toss around, but there's an influence upon our life, and we begin to walk according to that. Well, God's grace or his influence will teach you something to deny ungodliness, worldly lust, and to live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present world. And this is going to be my starting point. It's more from this. God will lead you away from the things we would call sin that would be destructive, and he's going to lead you to walk, to be sober-minded, or that you've got control of your flesh because you're yielding to him. He's the influencer. To live righteously and godly. And this is the word I'm more going to zoom in on, is godliness. Now, when you hear godliness, you think of like holiness or an inward quality, and that's not what that word means. But rather, it's an outward devotion based on an inward respect. There's a devotion based on respect. And the word actually is used in quite a few scriptures, primarily in Timothy and Titus. So, you know, we have some different things, some thoughts to draw from in this. But the Spirit of God will lead us to godliness, or have a devotion in life. You're devoted to something. Now, when I hear the word devotion, and I looked it up to make sure, again, devotion is an outward, something you're doing. It's not like just an attitude. It's what you're committed to, loyal to, and you have a passion or a zeal for it. These words, as well as some other ones, are how they would define in dictionary devotion. Devotion, and it can be used in some different ways. I had this thought came back to my memory my wife and I took our granddaughters to the York Fair, and they had it early this year. It used to be like first week of September. Now it was July or what? And we had been taking them to the York Fair for years and years, ever since they were real, real, real little. We would take them there. So it's sort of like, it's just something they look forward to doing with us and spend time with them. And as you know, earlier this year had certain things that to overcome relative to physically health and so forth. And I really was not up to the walking and standing and walking and standing. Because generally, one of the things we would do is go into the building where all the animals are. And there's all these rows and rows and rows. And the people from farms are entering them in, like, to be judged who has, the best hog or or goat or whatever. And, yeah, I knew we would do that, and they'd want to get on rides. And, my wife asked me, well, are you up for doing this? I said, I will go. Why? I have a devotion to my granddaughters. And that's something I always did. So I was going to force myself to do what I had to do, whether I felt like it or not. And so we go, to the building, all the animals. And I said, let me just sit down out here, where they had all the concession stand and that. You take them in, pick me up when you come back out of the building. Just let me sit here a little bit. And they're all fine with that. And the girls understood. They were completely fine, understood. But out of my devotion to them, and that's something we always did, I was going to go. And I would force myself. There are some things in life you have to make yourself do. And if you really don't want to do it, you'll find a reason to excuse yourself. But when you live a life of devotion in certain ways, you stay with a certain thing. And devotion can be to a person or people. It can be to a cause, a work. But there is a devotion to that. So as the day is wearing on, of course, there was a threat of major thunderstorms, but we're going to the fair. I said to my wife, well, if it starts raining real hard, we can just go in with all the pigs and the cows and everything. But and later on it did rain. But I wasn't going to let rain or the fact that I didn't really feel like I had the strength to stand and walk all day. I wasn't going to let that stop me. So here we are, and we're deciding we're going to get like a whatever snack type of thing. And my wife begins to have a nosebleed because she deals with allergies and was taking like a Claritin or one of them. What thins your blood? That means you could end up with a bloody nose that's not going to stop. And she had dealt with that before some years ago and you didn't really think about it. She starts to have a bloody nose. Now, was she picking her nose or not? I don't know. We won't go there. that could set off a bloody nose too. Just in case any of you still do that. It's not always a good idea. But anyway, it's because of the Claritin, and she's bleeding. I mean, she's really bleeding heavy. So we sit down on the bench, and I went over to like where they selling like snow cones or whatever, and getting some ice to put on her nose and paper towels and everything because it's just bleeding. Standing there praying for her. The girls are sitting there watching all this. They're not sure what to do. They want to help. I had to get a hold of Sophie. She's ready to take off. And I said, look at this map. I think there's a first aid station around here somewhere. She starts taking off. She finds it on the map. One with self-initiative. She's taking off. Saying, Sophie, come back. Don't go. Because I didn't know she could have got lost. It's a big place. And so anyway, I'm praying for my wife and keep pulling out the paper towels and Kleenexes and praying for her. And so while this is going on a bench right down from us, there's two young girls sitting there, and this one girl is hysterical. I mean, she's really freaked out. Something happened. And she's crying and like out of control and all that. And my heart wanted to go over there and pray for her because I knew like she's being tormented or somebody die or what's going on? She's there. I mean, hysterical. And I wanted to go over and minister to her. That's what I wanted to do. Like the desire, because it's in me to do that. as a Christian, we should care enough, you know, want to reach out. However, I couldn't do that because of my devotion to my wife. I wasn't going to leave her side while blood's pouring out of her nose. You know, so I couldn't do that because of my devotion to her. Now, all the while, the granddaughters are observing what devotion is. Not that they never saw that before, but they're watching this. They didn't really say anything, but I know they take everything in. It'll come out of their mouth sometime later. They'll talk about things, and it could be whatever, but that's what kids do. And out of my devotion to my wife, there's no way I'm leaving her side right now. Yeah, because it's very upsetting when you can't stop yourself from bleeding. And some people actually lose it if they're bleeding profusely. I remember when I was in high school, my one best friend at that point, he was Mr. Outdoors guy. And we went down a muddy creek, walked along the creek and all that. And there, we were sitting on like a log right along the creek, and the log rolled, ends up coming loose, rolls down into the creek. So we, get dumped into the muddy creek. Anyway, he ends up like he's bleeding out of his nose or his head or something. And he was like Mr. Tough Guy and all that. He sees that blood coming out of his face. It passes out on me. So now, not only, we're wet, we're in the creek and everything, the guy passes out. So I didn't see that coming. So I'm just saying, sometimes people, when it comes to blood, it just flips a switch. And if any of you deal with that, I mean, it's not, nothing to be ashamed of. It's just some people react like that. And, seeing blood can make your knees have fellowship. Or shake a little bit, when you're seeing that. But even something like that, you have to stay calm, self-control. You can't let your mind, be bouncing off the walls. You need to get control here and be very, okay, here's what we need to do. So anyway, my devotion had me at the fair. Of course, my wife's with me. If I wouldn't have gone, she wouldn't have gone. My devotion kept me by her while she has a bloody nose, even though somebody else needed help too. That's just like an example of something, devotion. But devotion comes in a lot of ways. I guess I can make my political jab here. Our military has always been devoted to those who serve. And what's the saying? No man left behind, right? Only for military people to find out our president's not devoted to them. They're not going to stand by you no matter what. Not committed. Well, if you die over there, well, sorry, it's just collateral damage. I mean, that's the attitude, and I don't need to go off on that too much. You're aware of that and up to speed. But I'm just saying that's another example of devotion. And in the military, if you don't have devotion, you've got a problem. Because the men will be devoted to one another, devoted to their mission, devoted to the purpose. You just have to make sure you make clearly understood what the purpose is. The problem we had with the Vietnam War, nobody knew why we were there. So it fueled this rebellion in our nation we never recovered from. I mean, that was, when I was a teenager, that was our Afghanistan. It was Vietnam. And they did the same thing, pulled out, the helicopters are leaving off the embassy there in Saigon. You can pull up video of that. Only we didn't leave our people behind that time. So devotion comes out in a lot of ways in our life. A devotion is an outward thing. It's involving commitment, loyalty, and your heart, passion, or zeal. All those things kind of put together is what godliness is, or that devotion in our life. And that's something that the scriptures talk about, us having a devotion there. I'm a very loyal person. You could be devoted to your favorite football team, the Eagles, who won the Super Bowl once. But anyway, I'm like as loyal as can be when it comes to, you know, like if I'm identifying with a team, that loyalty, that there's like a devotion there. I'm not going to quit on them. I might not be able to bear watching them sometimes, but I'm not going to quit. And again, this concept comes into so many fabrics of our life. You know, anyone that has a business that's hiring employees, they want someone that's devoted to it, that has a respect for the work, a respect for the business, a respect for you, the owner, a respect for everything going on, to where they're very committed. They'll be there every day. They'll put in a fair day's work. Now, a lot of times, maybe you don't have the same energy every day, but at least you endeavor to give a good day's work and have a devotion to that. Some people aren't taught to be devoted in their work. There should be a devotion to it. I remember as a new believer, you know, reading the Bible, and the thing of, you know, do everything with all of your heart is unto the Lord. So if I was going to work, whether I liked everything about it or not, I was going to work my best and hard. When I first come out of high school and I got saved, and just new Christian, don't have to be any genius knowledge of the Bible, to do all is unto the Lord. And I was taught growing up respect, the concept of respect and hard work and devotion. I mean, I grew up around that. I was taught that. So as a mason laborer, I worked as hard as I could, to where I was mocked by, and this one big crew I was on, there was like maybe a dozen or so guys. Half of them were drug addicts, half of them were alcoholics. There was one Christian there. And then there was me. And these other guys would mock me because, like, you're an idiot. This was directed at me. Because when the boss would leave the job because they're doing whatever, getting, you know, supplies, you know, blocked, delivered, or whatever, they were going to the bar, whatever he was doing, they would just loaf. But I was still working as unto the Lord. In my mind, the Lord sees me. He sees me working. I'm really working for him, whether there's any man here to reward me or not. And they didn't like it. They would mock me. And then again, I when all that slowed down, the Carter administration years, I ended up in a foundry. I ended up getting into building maintenance there. I still had that work ethic. And they had a scam going in the maintenance department because the union head, he was in there. And they, 5 days a week, they didn't really do much anything. They walk from coffee station to coffee station, go up on the roof, it's a nice warm day, and sleep or whatever. No one knew what the maintenance guys were doing. You're just moving around. You could carry a hammer or a saw or something. Somebody thought you're going to do something. They didn't know. And the supervisor was like in on this. Well, I still worked as unto the Lord. Oh, they mocked me. And there was another fellow in there. He was a bricklayer as well. And he had that work ethic. He wasn't even Christian. But he had that work ethic. Oh, they hated us. Because in a way, we were exposing them. We weren't trying to do it. We were just working. You know, we were devoted in our work. And a Christian should be known, somebody's always going to do their best. There was one time when I was in Ukraine, they took me to this place, I don't remember the name of it anymore, but there was a pastor, and he was at that time probably mid to late 50s, I guess. And he told me a story, a testimony. His dad was a pastor, And at that, back in those days, it was communist, and Romania owned that part of Ukraine. Anyway, they killed his father, who was a pastor. And his mother had five kids. And the, you know, communists were taking over, and here they had this bakery there in that town. And they didn't trust anybody, because everybody was basically trying to survive, which meant they'd steal. They didn't trust anybody. And here this woman, she's praying to God, Lord, make a way that I can feed my kids, that we can live and not starve to death. Because that's what, they killed her husband as a pastor, and they'll, you know, let them starve to death. That they're perfectly fine, the communists, perfectly fine to let that happen. Well, here, they had this problem. They had this bakery. They needed somebody to run it, but they didn't trust anybody. And they put her in charge of it. Because they were the only Christians to really stand strong unto the death. Their devotion to God, they knew, translated into the work field. So they put her in charge of running the bakery. She has free bread to feed her kids. God provided. And you don't know who's watching you. If you're doing work and nobody's really seeing it, God sees. And that's what I used to keep in my mind when I was in that foundry, being mocked and trying to make a fool of me and all the rest, because I was working under the Lord. I lived devotion in my life. God sees. And sometimes, and he's the one to promote you. It's not when the big boss comes around, well, you know, bust my butt when he's around, make it look good. That's what these other guys would do. But, you know, they're not stupid. They won't be in business long. They can see, okay, you guys laid this much block that hour I was there, and the next 7 hours I was gone, you laid the same amount of block. I mean, they're not dumb, or they're not going to be in business very long. They figure that out. But the important thing is God sees. Living a life of devotion before the Lord, which is godliness. And in that godliness, in that devotion, God can develop us, and we can really grow. There's a devotion, again, encompasses commitment, desire, passion, zeal, and loyalty there. And sometimes people, they'll move forward in life because they have this. It says, he teaches us to deny ungodliness, worldly lust, and live soberly. If you don't deny yourself, you won't apply yourself. Now, there's other things you all could have been doing and be here this weekend. But you denied that to make a decision to be here. If you're going to learn to play a musical instrument, you might have to deny yourself going out and playing ball so you can practice that instrument. There's self-denial for any growth or development. And if we only want to just do what we like or what pleases us right now, that's not, we'll never really be in that place of devotion, you know, which is the outward applying yourself based on a respect. If you have a value on music, a value on that instrument, a value on how you could be a blessing, and there's desire there with that, then you'll practice and be devoted to it, not do it one week and not do it another. That kind of commitment you never really develop in anything. You need a devotion in your relationships. A devotion to be devoted to applying yourself to a marriage. A devotion being a father, where you're going to do what needs to be done to help your son or daughter you to bless them, whether you feel like it or not. And that, it brings this whole different perspective in our life. Now, the godliness, again, in that devotion, it comes. There's an attitude inside that then translate into that you are just so committed and loyal and passionate about something. Now, verse 13, it says, he teaches us to live this way, looking for something, that blessed hope and glorious appearing of our great God and our Savior, Jesus Christ. In order to devote yourself to something, you have to see the benefit or the blessing of it, or you'll never stay with it. What's the benefit of this? You know, if you're devoted in a marriage, then you'll end up, you'll have a successful marriage or joy, a good, you know, good relationship. But there'll be times maybe you're having to do some things you really don't feel like doing right now, but it needs to be done. And if we can't see the benefit of that or the blessing of that, like for me, when I was saying about going to the York Fair, in my mind, I'm sewing into my relationship and my wife's relationship with our granddaughters. So even though I didn't physically feel like it, we're going. It's something we, you know, would do together over the years. We're going to do that, sewing, because I value the relationship. To not do anything with them, not that it has to be something like that, it's just something that, you know, they would enjoy. Well, then I'm not going to have much come out of that. We have to be looking for something. If you don't see the reward or the value, you won't apply yourself the way that you would need to. So here, what we're looking for is the fact that the day is going to come, we're going to stand before the Lord. You don't know when your last day on earth is. And to anticipate that and live for that. Now, y'all that hear me, have heard me over the years, you know, could buy a new car if you had a Benjamin for every time you heard me say something like this. But I say it so much because it's important. What is the end game here? What's the goal? What are we really moving toward? And if it's money, well, maybe you'll get money, but you're not going to have this. If it's just your own pleasure, well, you might do this and do that and enjoy this and that, but you may not have any depthy relationships or really the well done, good and faithful servant from the Lord when it's all over. So what are we moving toward? The goals we would have should be something we have highest respect for, and we see the benefit and the blessing of it. So for the Christian, it really should be to know we're pleasing God. That's the highest thing. Now, the more we're carnally natured, your mind's more absorbed into things and money and pleasures of this life and all of that. And it's not wrong morally to have any of that, but it shouldn't be our pursuit or the thing we're devoted to. So what are you looking for? That will rule your life. That will be the thing you're looking as having greater value will dominate your desires. And we need to have control of ourselves that nothing's like moving us or dominating us above the Spirit of God dominating us. Well, it says here, the Lord gave himself for us to redeem us from all iniquity, because the works of the flesh will hinder us from pleasing him, and purify to himself a peculiar people. Now, this word in the English, it's not a good translation. It's speaking of, you've been chosen, you're a special people. Chosen for him, for his purpose. You read the word peculiar and you think that means I should be weird. No, he's not asking us to be weird. We are chosen, called out from the world. We have a purpose and a mission. Now, again, with devotion, devotion can be to a person, and it can be to a mission or a cause. We have a mission from God. Now, as men, we were created to be productive, and the work of our life, we have a sense of productivity in that. If your work doesn't give you any satisfaction, you'll end up hating it. This is where a lot of times people might work in, say, a factory or something, and do something that's repetitious, and they don't feel that they're being fruitful in it, and they start getting depressed. Now, I like how Harley would do it. You know, guys would follow a bike down the assembly line and have that sense. I think they do maybe half of it, and then another team another half, rather than just all they do is put like bolts in one place or something. Well, that would get monotonous. But they felt somebody had the wisdom there to understand the nature of man. You want to feel you're producing something. So those, a lot of people work there would feel like, we built these bikes. Rather than, my guy just you're putting bolts on something. You don't have that sense of productivity. But God created us to work. He says, being zealous of good works, or the work for him, the mission for him. Now, males, men, tend to make friends around the work of their life. Females want somebody they can talk to. Most females will have one man in their life, their number one female friend, and something to nurture. If the kids are grown out of the house, you get a dog or a cat or a guinea pig or something. Pet mouse. No pet snakes. But that those things are God put in a woman. Okay? Where men need to be a part of something fruitful with a group of men. So that's the reason why, I know as a kid growing up, my dad, my uncles are all into hunting and that. Had a cabin up in the mountains. And it was this big event, you know, where a week, maybe 2 weeks, buck season. It was like the trek to Mecca. You know, into the hunting cabin with a goal, a common goal, to kill bucks. And there was some division amongst them. Some wanted to just go out by themselves, and they call still hunt, and others wanted to do it as a group, where you have certain guys that are driving and certain ones standing at certain places, knowing they're going to drive the deer to them. You just have to watch what you're doing, that you don't accidentally shoot somebody. But aside from that, but there's that element of we're doing this together. A lot of times men will make friends with who they work with because you're actually working together to accomplish something together. You might have nothing else in common with them, but you know, you're sharing in that work. A lot of times you get away from the work, you don't even really give a thought about that person. But in the work, you're together. So whether it's like military or sports, see, this is part of the draw and appeal with team sports. You're identifying together. You have a cause or a mission to beat the other team. And a lot of that's pride-based, where you're proving you're superior and all the rest. That's the downside part of it. But the thing of working together, there's virtue in that. And there's a certain element. Men were created to have that. You know, so for some of you younger guys, this can be enlightening to you to understand why certain things might appeal like that. And you do need an element of that in your life. God's desire is that as men of God, we have that together in the work together for him. That's the greater work. That'll exist all of our life. You could have someone who plays football blow out their knee. It's over. That's out of your life now. Now what are you going to do? But there's an identifying together in a cause or in a work. People need a cause. And God's intention was his purposes be a cause to us that we would work together in that. Now, the challenge can be where everybody fits with that, and people are at different places in their life and so forth. But the thing is, if you don't do something to contribute, well, then you're never really a part of something. I mean, I could have gone to the hunting cabin, just lay in on the sofa and put wood on the fire, but I wouldn't really be a part of the group of men going out buck hunting. I wouldn't be a part of that. So sometimes people, they don't feel that they're a part because they don't contribute. You have to do your part to be a part. It's like that with families. If everyone is taught growing up, and some of you have larger families, that you contribute. Your mom was not going to do everything for you while you play video games. You're going to contribute. You must learn to contribute to the family to feel any identification there. It's not healthy for someone just do everything for their kids. That's bad parenting. They need to learn to do themselves, but in the contribution they're making, they'll feel they're a part. And you need to find, well, what can they do? A 4-year-old can't do the same thing as a 12 or as a 16-year-old. There's things you can do. How many dads could use some help mowing the lawn? Well, there's things we can do. And I realize, you're busy with school and all that, but sometimes people, they want to get out on their own. But what they don't realize, now you're working 40, 50, maybe 60 hours, plus you're taking care of the place, doing your own laundry, doing all this, that, and the other. There's a lot of work there. Now, when people join together in a work, it's like better for everybody. And we learn to do that in a marriage. And it's not like men only do this, women do that. I grew up real traditional like that. Men did everything outside the house, women did everything inside the house. That's why I didn't start cooking until I turned 50 years old. Men didn't do that when I was growing up. My mom did that. My grandmother did that. You can do different things. It's not like, you do this, you do that. And love would have us say, what can I do to help? Rather than, what can I do for me while you're manipulated to do more? What can I do for you while you're manipulated to do more for me? That's not the way it's meant to be. So anyway, coming back here, God desires to have a people that are his people that are zealous in their work for him. Now, all employers dream of having people like this, a workforce that they can't wait to come to work and give everything they have to it. And all employers cry about this. It's hard to find people willing to work. You younger guys, I want to tell you something. If you'll develop godly character and that work ethic, there are people who are looking for somebody like you. I was talking with, I think Mark said, drove by Wendy's, and they're saying, we'll give a $2,500 bonus after 90 days if you'll come work. Now, I remember some years ago, I used to see those kind of ads for like nurses, the hospitals, $5,000 bonus, $10,000, but you got to work a year because they were understaffed. They couldn't get enough people. So they're trying to sort of like bribe them in like that. And my wife and I will lament, sometimes, you know, we drive through a place like that and think, man, they got bad workers. They have a stinking attitude. And it makes it unpleasant even to get a hamburger tossed out the window to you. I mean, it's unpleasant because they have poor work ethic. There's no devotion there. And I've often thought to myself, if I had a business, I'd just drive through a place like that and watch for the pleasant. Like, say, a young lady, very pleasant. Oh, can I help you, sir? Oh, it's a nice day. And then just say, would you like a better job? I'm hiring down here. You've got the right attitude. I can't tell you how many times I've thought thoughts like that. Now, I'm not a businessman, so I don't do something like that. But if I was, I think I'd do that. Because it's not easy to find people that just know how to show respect. Just show us a little respect in the restaurant. And again, the devotion comes out of the respect. Why do you respect certain things? You see the value of it. You see the value of your mama, you respect her. Because she's working to serve you, to help you. You see a value of a job you would have. You respect that paycheck. You're going to respect the workplace. Respect your coworkers and down the line. So the Lord's looking for a people, just like all the employers. Only he doesn't bribe us and say, I'll give you $2,500 bonus if you can just work here for 3 months. If you just serve me a little bit. Actually, he does better than that. We have eternal life. We have eternity in heaven. You know, our benefit package far out surpasses anything the world can give us in a benefit package. But can we see that? Or are we more just ruled by what we can see and feel around us in this world? If we begin to see eternity and what's out there, we'll live for him with that. One of the things I find interesting now with Islamic terrorism that gets in the news, and we had a recent thing with Afghanistan, and so there's people in our government already thought they can bribe those people. We'll just toss them some money, and they'll just leave us alone, and they'll be happy and all the rest. They don't have that same value system. They live in nasty places, I'll just say it that way. they live in some squalor. They live in poverty, and they're not oriented about with money and things. Those societies are pride based, honor / shame based. The worst thing could ever happen to them is to shame them. The best thing is to be honored. So they feel to die trying to kill you is a great honor. And Satan in that religion says, well, if you die in a jihad holy war, you'll go to heaven and have 70 virgins or something like that. And it all is crazy, crazy stuff. And they'll actually lay down their life because they're looking at a lie that they believe that there's some eternal value to them doing this stuff, to killing people like us, the infidel. You know, so out of that, they'll have that kind of commitment. Christians used to have that kind of commitment. Some have that commitment, but not nearly what used to be or what should be. We should all have that kind of commitment. But it comes back to, what do I see as the reward here? In Hebrews 11:6, it says, he that comes to God by faith must believe that he is, and he's a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. You won't pursue after him any more than you see it's going to benefit you. If we can see the benefit, well, then we'll do that. We'll pursue after him. Now, coming back to with devotion, God wants us to have a devotion to him first and foremost. You're devoted to him. And it says in 1 Timothy 6:3 that the doctrine of Christ is according to godliness. the word doctrinaire is not like some just words on a paper, but rather the instruction and teaching that we would receive from the Lord, it proceeds out of godliness. Or in other words, to really know him, you'll have to devote yourself. To really get the benefit of that relationship, there's a devotion to him, the person of God, that we need to step into. Jesus said it another way. If you don't love me more than your own life, your father, mother, brother, you won't be my disciple. You won't follow me if we don't love him more. So our devotion, there's a devotion to the Lord, commitment, loyalty, and passion or heart towards the Lord that we need to develop in. And that's where the learning and everything really takes off, in that we're devoted to that. I'll use Jared as an example, something where as a young person, he devoted himself to developing his musical gift. And I think you were 15 and God spoke to me, said he has a desire to play the bass. I said, Jared, do you have a desire to play the bass? He said, yeah, I do. So we bought a bass. I never had to tell him to practice. I had to tell him to stop practicing. It'd be like 2 hours, you know. He was still going. It's like, do you have some homework or something else you need to do? But there was a devotion to it. And you could hear someone, one of my favorites is Phil Keaggy, because I learned to play guitar. Not that I'm gifted in that, but for the sole purpose to worship at home, wife, children, worship the Lord, and I needed all the help I could get. You know, I don't have a gifted voice and all that. So that was why I learned. And even before I was saved, I mean, there were certain guitar players. I love to listen to the Allman Brothers and Jimi Hendrix. And you know, some of you have no clue who I'm even talking about. Some of you know. I enjoyed that. So here comes, I get saved. Here's Phil Keaggy. He's greater than all of them. You know, guitarist. And I remember Don and I went to hear Phil Keaggy. This maybe like 10, 15 years ago. Over to this church in Lancaster, it's a big church. I mean, I could hardly sit still in my chair. I think it was embarrassing her. But I was just so drawn in, you know, because there's this fantastic guitar player, but he was devoted to that. And those type of people practice, I mean, they play their instrument all day. And that's how they develop like that. But it's in them. They have a passion for it in their heart. They're faithful to continue to do that, and then they develop. And in my mind, I would think the thought, well, I'd love to be able to play like that. But the reality is, one, I don't have a gift for it, but you can develop things you're not gifted in if you're devoted to it. I wasn't committed to that point. I wasn't devoted to put the time in where that's like the thing of my life. I'm devoted to this, not iPad technology, to the Word. That's my devotion, because that's what he's called me to do. And you can have someone who's called to preach, but they're not really devoted to the Word. They're not going to get stronger and stronger. I mean, I think I can honestly say I preach stronger than I ever have. That's because I'm devoted to the Word. That's going to produce that. And to prayer. That's what I should be doing. Well, whatever you're going to do, do with all of your heart. I'm a firm believer in that. Apply yourself. So here's, you know, Jared developing. And actually, one of the men's retreats, how many years has it been? He told you to play a keyboard. And after the meeting, he said to me, hey, God spoke to me. I'm going to start playing the keyboard. Pick it right up. And because he could better lead worship and then write as well. You know, it's a good instrument for writing music and leading. guitar is good for that too, but that's what God told him. Well, there was a young man that, same age, grew up around Jared, backslid, kind of drugs and stuff, come back around. And he's marveling how Jared developed. And he had a musical gift and didn't develop it. And he's lamenting that he said, I wasted 10 years of my life. That's probably 10 years ago, this thing. And the guy, the young man's lamenting to me, I wasted 10 years of my life. And he saw here was his peer, Jared as his peer, who developed to stay devoted to what was in him to do. Develop it and can do a lot with it. You don't want to be like the guy that wastes 10 years of your life or 20 or wake up one day and say, I wasted 40 years of my life. I'm ready to retire. And I didn't do anything with my life. You do not want that kind of regret in your life. The regret was just pouring out with this young man. And I said to him, well, start today.
Absolutely.
You know, if you realize you should have done something and you're not, don't just wallow in it and pity yourself. Start today. You can always start again. Start today. You may not progress as far because you wasted some time. I regret that I wasted my teenage years of life on drugs. What would have happened? What could I have done if I would have learned three languages in high school? Now I was stoned every day, literally. Wasted those years. But when I really came to know Jesus and was set free, I gave all I had, and I still am. I still am, 47 years later, whatever it is, being all in person, all in for the Lord. So we don't want regret. Devotion is that commitment. There's loyalty comes into play when it's involving people. There's a passion we begin to develop. And sometimes it's as you do something, you get even more of the heart for it. You know, with food, you can acquire a taste. You can learn to like Brussels sprouts. I eat them quite often now. I mean, you have to know how to make them. If you eat them enough, you can. And actually, your taste buds can be changed in 3 weeks. I found out when first time I went to India in 1981, all we had was rice. And back then there was this Rice Krispies commercial. It's going to be a rice day. And that was a running joke. We wake up in the morning and say, it's going to be a rice day. Rice for breakfast, rice for lunch, rice for dinner too. And usually when I come home, I say, Donna, you can make anything, but don't make anything with rice. At least wait like a month or so. We don't eat a lot of that anyway. Maybe that's part of the reason why. But you can acquire a taste. So anyway, I'm away for 3 weeks that first time. And I'm just thinking about, man, I get home, I'm going to have like pancakes with butter and syrup on. And she makes that. And I ate one bite and couldn't eat anymore. Because I didn't have sugar in my mouth for 3 weeks. Ah, this is horrible. I got over it. I reacquired a taste. But a little tough there for a while. You acquire, some people like things that you think, man, what's wrong with you? You like liver? Well, you can acquire a taste for it. And there's a principle in that, that as we're applying ourselves to the things of God, you acquire the taste for it. Initially, sometimes there's things that it's a little hard at first. It's like that with anything. and you begin to experience the benefit of it, then you start to like it. So whether you really like doing some things God would want you to do or not, it's irrelevant. It will produce, and God's looking for us to be producers, you know, zealous in our work for Him. And it's going to come out of the devotion where we really begin to learn. But you first have to follow Him. You first have to begin to pursue after Him before you're really going to learn that much. And as you're learning to know Him and His ways more, then the blessing of it starts to really come into play. Phil, is that all applied directly with physical exercise? You start out, you don't think, man, this feels good. My muscles are hurt. I can hardly bend over. But after a while, right, you start to crave that because your muscles are used to getting that blood flow and the oxygen and whatever all else is going on in that. Where someone, I watched a little bit of the Olympics, and one of the things that always fascinated me was those Ironman competitions. They have that in the Olympics now. They swim a couple miles, then they ride a bike for like 70 miles, and then they run for 25 miles, a whole marathon. I think, man, how can they do that? And they're happy boys. I mean, it doesn't compute for me, but somewhere they began the process of physical training, and they got to where their body was craving it, feeding on it, and they actually liked what that was doing for them. God bless them, or somebody can do all that stuff. You know, like the Navy SEALs. You better like that. You don't join the SEALs and have a passionate devotion to complete exertion unto exhaustion and possibly getting killed in the process. If you don't learn to love all that, it's not for you. And there's so many things in life like that. So the concept here of devotion, now some people that are undisciplined will always want to say, you're just being religious. That's what undisciplined people say. Anyone that blows off discipline, you watch their life, they're vulnerable in areas and they're weak in some areas. They won't discipline themselves. The young man exhort to be sober. That means there's discipline in our life. Discipline in what we think. Discipline with our emotions. We don't let ourselves go out of control. My wife and I the other night became aware of half a dozen police cars parked next door on our street. We hear the young man there. You know, we talked to him times. He's okay to talk to. But got real drunk and tore his house. He destroyed his house. Busted the windows out of his car while his wife was in it. I mean, he went into a rage. You don't mess around with alcohol. It will rule you. You don't even go there and mess around. You need control over things like that. Well, my point in bringing him up, he lost control of his anger. And I'd tell my wife, someday we're going to read about that guy. Because, you know, every sentence has curse words used. And that's just, his language isn't very developed. But a lot of cursing is just a reflection of anger. That's all it is. Angry man. And if you keep, whatever you express, it's like working muscles, it gets stronger. And you express anger and you allow it, it's going to get stronger and stronger and stronger. And then you do something like mix alcohol with it. You might, and then all the pressures of this life, he lost his business, all this COVID baloney, and you mix all this pressure, some people just snap. So the cops hauled him off to prison. And we heard a lot of ruckus out there, but it's not uncommon. He's a loud guy, you know. We get along with him fine, but he's just loud, curses a lot and all that. So we didn't think anything. And I And Donna said, something's going on. Look out the windows. Six police cars out front and an ambulance. Well, he went over the edge. And I've known of people, visit them in prison already, who will not discipline themselves. And in their pride, they think, I got this. I'm in control. And somewhere they could cross a line and they pay for it the rest of their life. I don't know if this girl's going to stay with him or not or whatever. He'd probably end up in jail because there's a cop. It's funny. He lives across the street from me. And he finds out about everybody. He told my wife, he's on parole. So I guess he researches everybody that moves in here. Oh, do you do that more? Oh, you can't do that. That's illegal. Well, he does it. This policeman does this. He says, oh, he's telling my wife this guy's on parole. And what that means is, well, you were let go early. You're going to have to serve time for all that now because you got arrested. You're exhibiting violence. My wife talks to the girl, and she's showing pictures of the inside of the house. I mean, Donna said, it looked like New Orleans, you know, when the hurricane just went through. Everything was busted up. And he said he jumped out the second-story window, and the cops came buck naked, cursing the cops. Oh, you probably run into that already. Domestics, you know, and alcohol and all that. And it's like somewhere back along the line, the guy didn't get what he needed. Yeah, and we've talked with him about the Lord. He respects us. He's fine. But you can't trust somebody who won't control themselves. And one shot like that, you could ruin your marriage forever. Him and this girl are just living together. But if she's smart, she'd probably leave.
Right.
But some people, you know, they keep giving people another chance and all that. And I'm saying all this, like, you younger guys need to hear what I'm saying. You know, there's some things you've got to allow yourself to have discipline brought into your life, self-control brought into your life. It's part of becoming a man and not just a kid in a big body who's destroying everything. And you don't want to be the guy that looks back and says, wow, I wish I lived my life different. You know, I regret I wasted my teenage years. That's not that many years. How much farther could I have been if I wouldn't have done that? The thing was, I didn't know the Lord. You all have access to Him, to His Word. I didn't know that at that point in my life and wasted some time. All that being said, we can always find areas where maybe we're wasting some time. But you start today with a greater commitment, consecration, you know, to whatever all it is you feel you're to do. If it's you feel you're supposed to run a business, well, that's your second marriage. If you're married to a woman, now you're married again. You're married to a business. And you have to treat it with respect. You can't be careless. And a devotion. The people that want to be part-timers in business never succeed in business. There's a devotion to it that's needed. So as we really begin to know the Lord for who He is and the benefit of knowing and serving Him, and we come into a place where we are devoting ourselves, that's when we really begin to learn and experience the deeper things of God.